Hey everybody, welcome to Techish. This is your host, Abidesi Osunsade of Hustle Crew.
And Michael Behain of peopleofcolorintech.com and of this podcast.
What up?
What up, Kurt? I'm joking, I shouldn't say that. That's gang affiliation.
New month.
March 2nd.
2020 is rolling by.
I know,
taking
man.
Taking casualties with it.
Oh, don't say that. That's so sad. Yeah, there's been quite a few people that have died, actually.
No, I'm being serious. This is one of the most intense years. Chamath, the early Facebook employee.
He ain't dead. He's all right, though.
He's all right.
Okay, cool. Yeah, what about
him? But what he pointed out on Twitter is that this is one of the most chaotic starts to a year in recent memory.
We almost had World War III, Iran, USA.
Right.
The coronavirus.
What will March bring?
Stock market has dropped. What else?
Recession underway.
That's a lot of stuff anyway for 2 months and a bit, basically. I'm scared, cuz. But you know what I'm saying? Hopefully we were right.
Tekish holding it down, though. It's okay. This is your safe space.
Everybody get close. We're going to hug up. Enjoy. So Jason Fried, who is the CEO of Basecamp, I think he's the CEO. Yeah. Anyways, he tweeted out...
I call him Fried.
Jason Fried? Fried.
I feel like it is Fried.
I think it probably is Fried, yeah. Giving out equity in startups benefits the ownership way more than the employees. It allows the owners to push employees harder and harder because, quote unquote, you've got skin in the game now, you're an owner. No, you aren't. Owning less than 1% of anything is an ownership. Thoughts? Because, you know, this triggered a lot of the VC industrial complex. Like, a lot of people like, oh, my days, what are you talking about? I got 1% of Uber, I'm now rich. I got 1% of Facebook, now I'm rich.
I'll take 1% of Facebook.
Real talk.
I'll take 1% of Tesla.
So what are your thoughts? Who do you think this whole startup equity game benefits? Like, do you really think... He's essentially saying that it's a con and that if you're an employee, really and truly, you're just being tricked into working harder for something that more times than not, you're not going to, nothing good of it is going to come from it.
I mean, Groupon was a painful time for me.
So you had equity, right?
I worked 12 hours days. Yeah, I had equity. I came from a finance sector job.
Yeah.
Which was well paid and well compensated. Ooh. But, you know, I wanted to, for like 23-year-old me at the time. Yeah. And I remember, I want to get into tech. I want to be like on a rocket ship. I want to be a billionaire or at least a millionaire or at least not in my overdraft.
Yeah.
And when I went to negotiate my comp, my boss reminded me that I should think of my compensation not only as the cash I was given, not only as the benefits, but also in terms of the equity I'd be given.
Right.
And he was like, you know, based on this, based on that. And so many companies, you know, Hotel Tonight, they poached me from Amazon and they were just like, oh yeah, you know, we can't compare to Amazon because, you know, we're early stage, but think of the equity, you know, if we go public, then it's this and it's that. And it's tough, right? Because I feel that I am not someone that incentivizes people through ownership in my company.
Right.
Right? Like I have part-timers that run Hustle Crew because I work at Product Hunt. It's a full-time job.
Mm-hmm.
And I just felt it was really important to be transparent and not pretend I was going to like one day be able to like pay them loads because the company floated. Going back to the Groupon example, we went public at a share price of $16.
Yeah.
And at the time, my restricted stock units, if I vested them, would have been a five-figure sum.
Right.
A very generous, healthy five-figure sum. Could have made a big dent in my student loans.
Yeah.
By the time my stock actually vested, our share price was less than $4.
Wow. Yeah, that's not
so
a good
look. So that figure like quartered. And I do think the reality is the majority of people are not really going to benefit from ownership.
The VCs that were pushing back, it's such a flaw in thinking because essentially you're saying, I won the lottery, you can win too.
Yeah.
And when you're taking equity, a lot of times it is a lottery. And it depends what stage you're joining a company. Like if you're joining a company that's about to IPO within a week, although like you said with Groupon, it didn't work out for you, there's still a better chance that it can work out versus joining a startup that's 2 months old.
Yeah.
That equity is, you know, you might as well just bet on black, essentially.
Mm.
And I've turned down equity in companies at that stage, and I've been proven right. So like companies have said to me, we can pay you more or we can give you equity. I said, give me the money because I don't know what this company's going to do.
Mm.
And I would have ideally liked both, but they weren't giving me both. They were like, I have a rule. I took the money and the company went nowhere. I could have been completely foolish and it could have turned out to be the next Facebook, but I was just like, I'm not buying it. I don't believe it for 1 second.
What's the percentage of companies that even end up having a capital event after raising venture funding?
I mean, it's the same odds that we tell founders when you start off, like, yo, like if you start a company, what's the odds that you're going to go public and become worth billions?
Or
get acquired. It's a similar odds. It's like entrepreneurship is hard and most entrepreneurs fail and most companies fail. So you're essentially saying, I'm going to work hard in a situation where I know more times than not, this is going to be worthless. What we have here is the survivorship bias of the VCs and the entrepreneurs that have made it rich are now looking back and saying, no, I did this. But it's like, you're smarter than that. This is pure survivorship bias. You're the ones that have made it. Not every company is going to be Facebook, Uber, etc., etc. There's a reason why we talk about these companies is because they are rare events. So would I much rather, instead of a salary of 70,000, would I much rather a salary of 100,000 as opposed to getting 70K plus equity? You might be better off in terms of your current economic security. I'll take the extra 30,000 and I'll invest it in the public markets my own.
Yes.
And more times than not, that's going to be worth it. Because would I rather own Amazon shares or would I rather own this little startup shares?
Right.
Probably Amazon shares, keeping it 100. Like, and over the next 20 years, I would probably bet that Amazon
that's
shares
the only
are going to be
ever
worth.
Had with
yeah.
the equity paid off.
Yeah, because it's what's the word? It's like the power law, which is that a very few amount of companies are going to be worth anything, and they're going to be worth disproportionately an amazing amount, right?
That's so true.
And Amazon is a rare breed, and if you had those shares, that's fantastic, right? But not every company is going to be Amazon, and we have to acknowledge that.
I think what was really interesting is that another VC came out and said, I strongly disagree with this. How would startups ever compete with big companies to attract talent unless they can sell the dream of dominating the market one day? And I was just like, that doesn't feel like a defense to me.
Yep, it's not.
Because it feels like you're just explaining why startups use equity.
Right.
And if anything, there's like something a bit disingenuous about that. Because I'm sure the founder believes they will dominate the market one day. But there's no guarantee.
Absolutely. I think, to be honest, in a situation... I think we're all still figuring it out. I wouldn't mind a situation where that equity equates to profit sharing. I know profits are a dirty word in Silicon Valley. Like, nobody wants to make profits, right?
I don't want
to
make
I don't want to make no money. You know what I'm saying? Like, I just want a full SoftBank or whatever they're called. Like, and take their money. But if I were to at Basecamp or any other companies that are notable for basically, not bootstrapping, but, you know, not trying to go public, if I had equity, if it meant like, okay, you're now entitled to 1% of the profits of this company, or there's a profit sharing scheme, I'd mess with that. I'd be like, all right, cool, this equity means something. I am an owner in a material sense. But if it's like, let's just roll the dice and maybe one day we're going to be Amazon, I'm not buying it.
I also feel that people should be paid according to the value they add to the company and according to the career capital they have accrued. You know, we're living in this hugely blurry world between personal and professional. Every time you hire someone, they're bringing their career capital with them, you know, wherever they've been.
Yeah.
And then your company immediately is benefiting from that. And I'm thinking particularly about people of color who are approaching mid to senior level roles. Mm. We are in high demand right now.
Yeah.
There is not a lot of supply of tech veterans from underrepresented backgrounds that have been in the game because most of us have left.
Yeah.
And I just think that one of the frustrating things about companies, startups in particular, that really lean on this like take equity thing, is that it's also a way for them to pay people less than their market value.
Absolutely. Chamath, who you mentioned earlier, he actually agreed. So he's a prominent, you know, ex-VC. He's now actually part of Virgin Galactic now.
Is he?
Yeah. It's So
brown man on the moon.
He agreed. He was like, listen.
Wait, have we ever had a brown man on the moon?
I don't think so. Okay. You know, we've had a black woman in space. I don't know if we've had any black women on the moon. That's the thing. So watch out for you. I digress. But so Chamath essentially was saying how he agrees. And everyone's like, aren't you a hypocrite? Because Facebook made you obscenely wealthy with the equity that you got there. And he's like, yeah, it did. But you know, when we're talking about most companies not being Facebook, I'd rather pay my employees at the top band of what they're worth than give them some pie in the sky. And I'm sure someone's listening now and they're like, well, I work at Slack or I work at this company and this equity is going to be worth something. And it very well may be. It's all contextual to your situation. I'm specifically talking about companies that are just starting out and are very much high risk. In that situation,
B2B SaaS, whatever. Like,
but then those companies can't compete on salary with Amazon. So then what do they do? That's the thing. And just because it helps startups doesn't necessarily mean it helps the employees.
But this is where we change the system. We change the system and we say, why are you raising funding? You know, if you're raising funding because you need to grow, you need to expand, you need to build a team, then have that conversation with your investors and say, I want to pay people.
But you just can't compete with Amazon, though. If Amazon's offering you 200,000 plus equity as a startup, you can't pay that.
Well, I'm going to challenge that because I had an interesting conversation with Brianne Kimmel on Product Hunt Radio about her fund, Work Life Ventures, and she said that based on conversations she has, so she has a SaaS community that she runs, they do events, workshops, etc. She feels that in the future, companies are going to compete on culture. So Amazon's stocks might be valuable, but Amazon's culture is known for being really dry and boring.
That's true.
And quite old-fashioned.
That's true.
Meanwhile, you have companies like Airbnb, and I would say Airbnb does not pay on like the higher end of startups.
Okay.
But they have an incredible culture, right? You get like all these amazing credits. You can work from anywhere. You can stay at Airbnbs. Mm-hmm. They have a whole department dedicated to belonging. So in their mind, they're like, I'm going to pump a lot of money into the culture piece.
Right.
And invest in experiences and benefits and perks and whatever. And then I'm not going to compete with Facebook on offers, comp, cash comp. But I know that we have a better culture and a better brand than Facebook, and people are probably going to pick us over that.
Interesting. Okay, everybody, hit us up on hashtag. Let us know. Cash versus culture. What's the most important thing?
Cash versus culture.
Or does it matter how much cash it is?
If you're looking for a new start, check out Pocket Jobs. That's PocitJobs.com. PocketJobs.com. It's a career platform for people of color in the tech industry looking to level up. It's used by tons of startups, nonprofits, and large tech companies looking to find amazing candidates of color for the tech roles. Link in the show notes.
So someone's trying to get rid of Jack Dorsey from Twitter. So
haters.
An activist. I think it's someone that just wants to make money. So it's an activist investor. I forgot the person's name. They have invested, I think, for quite a small percentage of the company. I think it's like 1 to 4%.
That's a lot in cash
terms. That's a lot of cash terms. It's absolutely a lot in cash terms. And they run a hedge fund. And they're essentially trying to force out Jack Dorsey. And I'm not necessarily mad at it. I mean, I have respect for founders who you know, founder-run companies. And I think he is a visionary in a sense. And he's very creative and whatnot. I know you disagreed like a few episodes back. But you said he's a bit like he's a bit overrated. Or for example, like you kind of intimated like he's not all that like.
I just generally think, like not to be harsh, but in a world where underrepresented people are undervalued, it also stands to reason that people, some people are of overvalued. The dominant groups are overvalued.
Yeah, I agree. There are a lot of people that are overvalued. I just don't necessarily know because I think we talked about Dorsey and Elon. I wouldn't necessarily put them in that bracket, but fair enough. Like I think there are some people. I think you're talking about the masses of people within the dominant group who are overvalued. The people like you know that might work at Goldman or the people that you know have a startup that's been funded and it's gone nowhere. But if you're talking about somebody who's created Twitter and SpaceX and Tesla,
but not,
I don't necessarily say that they're gone.
Okay.
Talk to me.
There's this comedian called Bill Burr.
Yeah.
You can watch him do a sketch on Steve Jobs. And he basically, like, the joke is...
He's a bastard.
No. The joke is, numbers of people build these incredible products and we put all of our focus on one individual.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And I think my issue with Jack Dorsey and Elon Musk is that they absorb all of that glory.
Yep.
When I know for a fact they are not solely responsible for all of those things. And I don't like that.
I agree. I think that's a systemic issue within capitalism because even when we have black founders that are successful, we do the same thing. Like you might be like, oh, look at this black founder, they're killing it. But
we're not talking about black founders.
I know, but I just mean, as in whoever makes it, they're always going to be a figurehead, right? And I just mean... Of the figureheads that we're comparing, I wouldn't necessarily say these guys are overvalued. But anyways, I digress. I'm sure most people disagree with me anyway. But, pardon me. How do you feel? Like, is it right that he's ousted? Let's break down the facts. He's the CEO of two companies.
Right.
Which I definitely don't agree with. He wants to move to Africa for 6 months, which I think is good in itself if you want to do that for your own, like, you know, benefit. Mm-hmm. But running a company like Twitter, I don't necessarily agree with it. Twitter as a stock has gone sideways. The S&P 500 has outperformed it and all the other kind of social media platforms have also outperformed it by far in terms of share price.
So much engagement.
Right or wrong idea? And then if you are the new CEO of Twitter, how do you fix it? Go.
All right. So if you're listening, here's my resume. No, I feel that I understand where this person is coming from. Paul Singer's investment firm. What is this? Elliott Management. So they have $1 billion stake in Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot.
It's a lot of money.
That's a lot. And I feel like if you think of other peers of Twitter in the startup space, you see people who have been able to establish a business model that is sustainable and scaling highly.
Yeah.
Twitter has ads, but they are by no means the default option for most people.
Yep.
Meanwhile, Snapchat's going from strength to strength, or Snap as they
kind
call
of,
it.
Yeah.
TikTok's on the rise. Instagram's doing its thing. Facebook is eating all our money and our privacy. And so I can sense that frustration because it's like you're supposed to be monetizing through ads, but everyone is making more money than you whilst you have more active users and more engagement. It's like they're still not able to translate their cultural relevancy
into dollars,
into money. And I sense that frustration. And I think it can't be helped by the fact that Dorsey, you know, as a fan of the platform, the inventor of the platform, very active on the platform, he's always talking about what he's doing, even when those things are quite controversial, like going to
the retreat.
That retreat in Myanmar, going to Nigeria, going to that. So I can imagine how people of a more old school ilk can be like, why is he talking about that yoga retreat when he should be turning my $1 billion into $10 billion? I don't know why he has a southern accent. So what I will say is I am backing Jack. I know you're expecting me to be like, kick him out, boy. You know, the fact is, it's a new thing. I know it's not so new, it's like over 10 years old, but like in the grand scheme of how we communicate, how we share information in the course of history, it is really new. And I haven't seen stats around user growth. Mm-hmm. That would be really interesting to me. But I know for a fact that certain key demographics are less active on Facebook as a platform, which has created the opportunity for TikTok. I want to see what's happening with Twitter, because if younger demographics are still very much engaged in it, which I see they are, and if marginalized groups are still turning to Twitter as a space to have platform, to have conversations, then I think there's still huge opportunity for Twitter. And maybe it's just a case of it hasn't quite thought about the business model that makes sense given who its most active user base is and given... Yeah, just given the situation it's in. I feel like a lot of times in the Valley, it's like, that works, let's copy it. You know, Sheryl Sandberg left Google to teach Facebook their business model. And it's like, Twitter's like, okay, great, we're going to do ads as well. Maybe that's not the right way to go. What do you think?
I'm not actually backing Jack in a situation. This is quite funny, considering how we started it, the convo. I think if it was Jack Dorsey, 100% CEO with only one job, I would back him. In this situation, I don't think it's fair that he can run two companies. I don't think you can do a fair or an optimal
Elon
job.
Elon Musk does it.
Yeah, last episode I kind of said I think Elon Musk is a class to his own in that sense, but you're right, even Elon is hard to justify, and I don't think it should run as it currently is. I think Twitter, there's so much value there to unlock, like you said, there's like the, as a total number of users, I think it's like 300 million, it's very tiny compared to Facebook, but it's literally the creme de la creme of the intelligentsia, journalists, politicians, Oprah, the whole world is on there moving and shaking and making it happen, and all the thought leaders and whatnot. How Twitter hasn't been able to monetize that is insane to me. It could be even as little as like, why is there no Twitter stories? Like, why aren't there like paid versions where I can kind of quickly get verified by paying $5 a month and get other kind of features? Like, there's so much stuff they could do, but they're trying to follow, like you said, the kind of generic social media playbook of just ads.
Yeah,
there's so much stuff.
Visionary.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. But Jack probably could be that person, but not half time. And definitely not half time, 6 months in Africa. Like, fam, what are you doing?
Are they resting on their laurels, do you think?
100%. Yeah, the product has stagnated. I mean,
also, what does it say about our incentives to keep innovating after we go public?
I mean, yeah, I think going public, you become a much more cautious company. You know, it's very hard to kind of rock the boat and say, we're going to do a 180 and try something else, because the public markets will just give you a slap. Stock price cut in half.
What would be your number one request for a feature?
That's a very good point. I think they have to get the bots and trolls sorted. There has to be some kind of verification when you sign up, whether that's like tagging your mobile number to your account, so that it's not so easy for trolls just to go in there and kind of, you know, screw up general elections.
I feel that it's not just the verification, it's just the quality of the content. Similar challenges to what Facebook have had, because I could still be an individual, an actual real legit person spreading fake news and generating a hashtag that's fake. And I think what's really challenging about Twitter is that it has this incredible opportunity because it is the first place for people to start reporting things and having conversations. But at the same time, there's something innate in human nature that immediately wants us to start abusing that or using it for like nefarious reasons. And I feel that that's the challenge, really. Same kind of thing with Facebook. All social media networks rely on us to, you know, keep them growing. And we are nasty.
But Twitter is a very particularly angry place, more so than I would say like Instagram, for example. I think, for example, even the quote tweet feature, I can't imagine. It's great for engagement, but I can't. What is the positive use case for that? Because every single time people do a quote tweet, it's normally something shady they're saying. It's normally saying,
to be like, I agree.
Okay, there we go. You're a very positive person, like we said. But like, but a lot of times it's used for bullying. It's used to kind of amplify things and show it to like a different demographic to kind of, you know, tease the fuck out of the person who's the original OP.
That's
right?
True, actually.
So I don't know. I mean, it's great for engagement. They say enragement is good for engagement and that type of stuff.
Maybe they just need to boot him and then bring him back, Steve Jobs, Apple style.
10 years later, yeah.
Because the thing is, it's not just about replacing him, it's also about who will be the right person to replace him, and then that opens a whole nother can of worms. You know, Uber had to go through that when Travis left. It's like, who's going to be the right human for the job?
Yeah, techish co-CEOs, let's do it. Let's apply. CVs in the post. So there's a black woman owned company called Honeypot, I believe it's called. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it sells like organic feminine hygiene products. And essentially it was spotlighted in a TV ad for Target. And essentially they were kind of highlighting black women entrepreneurs during Black History Month, saying, okay, listen, this company is kind of empowering black women. But there was a backlash. So the company's Trustpilot review system was bombarded with negative reviews. Uh-oh. From racist trolls, essentially saying, why are you kind of making it like it's only for black people? I buy this product. I'm no longer supporting this company. Okay. Then
White Lives Matter again.
White Lives Matter. Then,
in case you forgot.
Then Twitter, Black Twitter, came to the rescue and started kind of supporting the company. And now their sales have kind of doubled in a short period of time, right? Wonderful. I'll put the link to the company, Honeypot, I think it's called. And we're going to support that company if you can. Shout out to them. But it's like, why is it that when somebody kind of tries to uplift black women or black people in general, that there's that kind of backlash where it's like, well, white girl magic? Yeah. White girl magic. It's like, why? Like, what is? Explain that to me. I don't understand. I'm baffled.
It's ignorance.
Yeah.
First and foremost, it's ignorance. If you are in denial of the fact that there is racism in our society, and you're mm-hmm. in denial of the fact that those racist ideas, like white people are smarter than black people, or white people are less likely to do crimes than black people, are embedded into the structures that keep things running and mm-hmm. keep things civilized, then of course it's easy for you to feel attacked when one identity group is singled out and yours is not recognized in that, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it's so easy for people to say, oh, middle class lives matter too. Why are we always going to talk about working class people? Able-bodied people have problems too. Why are we always talking about disabled people? Hetero people have problems too. Why are we always talking about trans people or gay people or whatever? And it's just kind of like, it's just ignorance. I think first and foremost, it's ignorance. It's just a lack of understanding of what the real issue is. Like, if you see Black Lives Matter and you want to start talking about White Lives Matter, you need to go back to the history books and you need to do some revision. And then I think the second thing is more around power. And you probably saw the tweet. Someone had tweeted, where are all the women CEOs? Or where are all the women leaders? And someone quote tweeted that saying, where are all the men who are willing to promote women into positions of leadership so that they can keep rising up the ladder and become CEOs and board members?
Right. Yeah.
And I was like, that's such a great interpretation, because there is no shortage of women in the workforce, right? I mean, obviously in tech we could do better. I think we're still 1 in 5, but there's no shortage of women willing to do the work. What there is shortage of is opportunities given to women. And that's the same for underrepresented people as well. And if you look at how systems stay functioning, it's about the stories we tell ourselves. You know, in the book Sapiens, he explained this so well. We need to tell ourselves stories and we need to believe those stories. And then those stories are what we cling to. And I think there are a lot of people that have told themselves the story, if black people have more power, I am in trouble.
Yeah. I think my favorite quote is, when you're accustomed to privilege, equality feels like oppression.
There you go.
There we go.
When people feel threatened, they double down on maintaining their position. And we that's basically what we've seen happening over the last few years. You know, we've talked about it on the show before, but, you know, there is absolutely positive correlation between marginalized groups being more vocal and fighting for more rights. And on the opposite end of the spectrum, people sending us back to the dark ages, you know, increasing restrictions on access to abortion, increasing, you know, restrictions on like social mobility, increasing funding to welfare that helps disadvantaged people. You know, that there is an absolute connection between the two. Corona, yeah, slice of lamb, bruh.
So, are you scared or you think it's overhyped?
Oh, the virus.
Yeah.
Of course, I'm scared for humanity. Yeah. I'm also scared of animosity that comes from it. People being more racist against Asian people.
Yeah.
For no good reason, because people are ignorant and evil.
And I just saw a tweet where somebody, an Asian person from Singapore, was attacked in the UK with the threatening thing being said, like, I don't want coronavirus in this country, blah, 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 right? So
this is scary.
It's scary.
So it is scary. Also, I heard the Olympics might be cancelled if it's not under control by May.
That's mad.
And, you know, I'm a community builder. I'm a community manager. I'm active in communities. Real life connection is so important.
Mm-hmm.
I'm scared. What about you? I mean, I'm also not hysterical, though. I feel like it's important to say that. I'm not hysterical about it. Like, I'm still living my life as normal, but it's also because I'm privileged enough to be in a city that isn't at pandemic level.
Yeah, that's the good point. I mean, London seems to be okay so far. I think I'm not scared either, but I am wary. And I've seen some people that are in absolute denial. Like, a lot of my friends are just like, oh, it's nothing, man. It's a flu thing, whatever. And I'm not there, but I'm also, like, oh my God, end of the world. But I'm somewhere in the middle where I'm like, you know what? Maybe it is time to stock up some goods. Because you know what the thing is? I saw the news.
Oh, you're building a bunker, right?
Listen, fam, listen.
Yeah, you got space for me.
Me and Peter Thiel. I'm joking. So that sounded wrong. Anyway, so like in Italy, the supermarkets in the specific town where there was an outbreak, the shop things were empty. As in the rows were empty. And it's not enough that it may be overhyped and it might not be nothing to worry about. But the sheer fact that everybody else is panicking therefore leads to behaviors that are irrational that then impact me. So I start thinking, well, hold on. If I go to the supermarket and there's nothing there, what do I actually do? Like, how do I survive? You know what I'm saying? So I was having a conversation with a few loved ones and I was like, maybe we should just get a couple of beans. You know what I'm saying? Like a couple of oats or whatever, whatever. And obviously everybody should wash your hands thoroughly. But besides that, there's nothing else that we can do. The scary part of it is that most of us, that if you do get it, it will be mild, as in, like, most of us are young, so that listen to this podcast, it will be mild, you'll be okay, but you will be contagious to people that are not so...
The more vulnerable.
More vulnerable, yeah, older people, sick people, right?
I mean, I had a really bad cold last week.
Yeah, was stay away from me, fam. Yeah, stay away from me, you never know.
I'm on the mend.
Yeah, I don't know, yeah, it's difficult. I mean, yeah, no one panic yet, it's all good, really and truly.
I think this could potentially, though, be the snow... Is that a snowball effect?
Yeah.
Snowballs.
Yeah.
We're already seeing downward movement on stock markets.
Absolutely.
Tons of companies are issuing profit warnings.
Yes.
Apple.
Yeah.
Samsung.
I don't know about that. Profit warnings from Apple, but it's definitely like affecting the supply chain at the very least. Yeah.
Are you sure?
Yeah, Apple's has made so profitable. Apple's always like a profit machine, but it's definitely like a supply chain problem.
But companies that rely on China.
Will
be issuing profit warnings especially if it continues to grow. Like if the issue continues to get out of hand. So it's just fascinating taking myself out of it as like a human being who feels empathy for people who are affected. As a kind of scientist or social scientist, to me, it's also just fascinating to start connecting the dots at that macro level and think of what other things could happen as this keeps snowballing.
A recession maybe, definitely more anti-immigrant sentiment. It might also, I've seen someone say it will push people rightwards when it comes to immigration, but maybe leftwards towards healthcare. So for example, in the States, one of the big problems is that it costs $3,000 USD to be tested for coronavirus.
To be tested?
Yes, right. And
$3,000?
Yeah. I mean, this is what happens when the profit motive is king when it comes to healthcare. Whereas
that
other countries...
disgusting.
Yeah, whereas other countries are offering it for free, obviously, because it's within the benefit of society.
$3,000.
Right. And, wow, and what's going to happen? Obviously, I'm not an American and I don't live in the States, but you know, you live here, right? And we have a free healthcare for all, essentially, no matter what your circumstances are. And to those in the States that are like, oh, you know what, I've got my healthcare, I'm good, right now you're going to see that the herd immunity, the collective health, will impact you. Because if a big proportion of your population doesn't have healthcare, you are now more vulnerable. Now see that me is not actually going to help you. You see what I'm saying? That attitude of it's all about me, whatever, but people that ain't got their healthcare, that's going to impact you now.
That's true.
So it might end up pushing people to be like, yo, we need universal coverage, because in the macro, even just selfishly, it's going to impact me, right? And I wish it didn't take that, but that might be a thing.
Wow.
But also, everyone's working from home now. A lot of companies have shut down travel. A lot of the big boys and girls, sorry. And yeah.
Conferences
are shut down.
Events. Glastonbury?
I mean, you know what? I'm not mad at Glastonbury being shut down. You know what I mean? Like, it's not about that. Man, I ain't got time for Glastonbury, man. You know what I mean? But also, I mean, yeah, conferences.
Essence Festival.
Okay. Yeah, there we go.
Well, that's, now you care.
Yeah, now I care. I'm keeping it real. Anyways, like, I just hope, yeah, in a couple of months' time, we look back and be like, what was that hoopla about, right? And this is the problem with, like, these kind of quote-unquote black swan type events. When you might look like you're just panicking, because VC Twitter is panicking. If you go on Twitter, these VCs are just like, they're all of a sudden, you know, health experts, and they're like, oh, the exponential growth curve of the virus, and it's going to be 10 million people. And it's like, I'm like, yo, like, I just hope we look back and it is thing. But there's an element where being paranoid, there's no harm in being paranoid to a certain extent.
Mm.
As in, what's the worst case scenario of being paranoid? You look like a fool. What's the best case scenario of being paranoid? You might have just saved you and your family's...
It's evolution, baby.
Yeah, the paranoid survive.
But
I don't know.
I think there's...
Everybody wash your hands, that's what I'm saying.
Well, that's the big lesson out of this. We nasty. I've been in the bathroom. I see people walk straight out the stall, straight out the door, and I'm like, you nasty. And this is their fault.
Some of you are dating people like that. You don't even know that. Yeah, yeah.
You know who you are. You know who you are where you go to the bathroom and you do not wash your hands.
Mm.
This is your fault.
But the thing is as well now, it's not even just like go to the bathroom, wash your hands, which you should have done anyway. It's now like every time you go to like a new building or you've left, wash your hands. You feel me? And don't touch your face or mouth. Yeah, don't touch any of that.
Until you have washed your hands. But that is hard. Or your children or partners.
That is hard. I found myself
every
like...
Every time I come home, I wash my hands though because I take the tube and that shit's nasty.
But what I'm saying is I was on the train on the way here and I was just like, I want to touch my face so badly, but I can't. And because I knew I'm not meant to touch
my
face,
myself.
I was struggling. No, but your face gets itchy and you want to just like... and you're like, oh, okay. Control yourself. Anyways. Yeah.
Anywho. What I was going to say is there is a thin line between paranoia and panic.
That's true.
And yes, it's great to be... a bit cautious, but
don't go too far. Yeah.
Check out Abadesi's Hustle Crew. Hustle Crew is on a mission to make the tech industry more productive and inclusive through talks, training, and mentorship. Link in the show notes.
You know, shout out to rest in peace, sorry, to Katherine Johnson. She was famously in the Hidden Figures movie, showcased in it. She was a mathematician at NASA who did a lot of pioneering work and helped put a man on the moon, and for so long she wasn't really given her just credit, hence the name of the film Hidden Figures. She's now passed away at 101. A fantastic long-lived life. Shout out to her, man, and her family. That's a great life and a great thing. One thing I want to say though, shout out to NASA, because NASA's like hidden figures. I'm like, fam, you were the ones that were hiding them. Stop.
In the first place.
Yeah, like stop trying to take credit for this. Yeah, you were the ones that were hiding them, and now you're like, yeah, the hidden figures. It's your fault. Apologize, please.
Honestly, if anyone knows this information, I want to know: has there been a black or brown person on the moon?
So
because if there hasn't, we need to rectify that ASAP.
Are you gonna do it? Are you gonna do it?
I mean,
yeah, there we go. also on a serious tone, I want to say rest in peace to another person that I knew for a friend. I don't know them personally. Caleb Meekins. He was a British Ethiopian entrepreneur. He did a lot of work encouraging the diaspora to go back and invest. He was also a YouTube personality with tens of millions of hits. I'll tell everybody just to Google him. He passed away in a car accident recently, and he was somebody I looked up to. So shout out to him. Rest in peace, man. Hope his friends and family are okay. So last week's episode was really popular. We talked about, we answered a lot of questions people had. We responded to a few tweets. So if you've got any questions that you want us to answer on Techish, like just give us a shout and we'll get respond to you back on the mic.
# Techish free careers advice.
Yeah, hit us up. Shout out to Google for startups for hosting us. They gave us a free recording space. If you're recording a podcast, come down here and get your podcast on. That's this week's episode of Techish. Thank you for listening and supporting. Use the # Techish. Yeah, join the conversation. And join us on patreon.com/techish and support this amazing podcast. And you'll get like a whole bunch of extras and extra audio, extra stuff.
Extra hugs.
And yeah, cool. We'll catch you next week.
Bye.
Peace.